You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Singing, fellas. Dixieland, I was born. Early, Lord, one frosty morn. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
Well, that's Memphis's own Elvis Presley. We had to cut the king off there pretty quick there in American
Trilogy. Welcome to Memphis and the world.
Well, and we had to jump in there quick because we didn't want – that's the American Trilogy, of course, by Elvis, and we didn't want that abominable Battle Hymn of the Republic to get any airtime. Get that going. But now listen, hey, you know, Elvis was born, of course, in Tupelo, Mississippi, not far from where all of my grandparents came from. My dad's side from Corinth, Mississippi. My mom's side from Pontotoc, Mississippi.
And you know the smartest thing he ever did in his life?
Moved to Memphis, like my grandparents.
Well, that was part of it. But no, the smartest thing he ever did was to
dye his hair black,
yeah, which made him accessible to anywhere from 80 to 90% of the world's population. I tell his natural hair color was dishwater blonde, and if he had remained dishwater blonde, he would have had Eddie Cochran's career rather than Elvis Presley's career.
You always say that.
But on the other hand, you know, Elvis remained true to his roots. He stayed in Memphis, and he was a proud son of the South, as that
I don't think
rendition
would,
of Dixie shows you.
If he was still alive, I don't think he'd still be at Graceland with what happened to that neighborhood. Eddie and I actually did a video.
Maybe that whole neighborhood wouldn't have changed the way it did if he had stayed there.
Yeah, you got to – of course, that's a global tourist attraction to come and go through Elvis'
home. It's the only true tourist attraction we have in the city of Memphis. They've tried to manufacture, gin up other ones like the Mud Island River theme park, things like this. They just – Beale Street, nothing works like a legitimate tourist attraction. Elvis is like the mecca of Elvis fans throughout the world, and they take their equivalent of the hijab – at least once a lifetime, they have to come to El.
That's well, it, well, during the week of his death and the week of his birth, it's huge traffic. Anyway, but he was a Southerner, and that's a good rendition of Dixie. And this is our last night of Confederate History Month coverage for 2017. We really hope you've enjoyed it. We've enjoyed bringing it to you. Believe me, we look forward to this month year round, and we'll begin looking forward to 2018's version come May 1st,
As Lee Corso said, not so fast, my friend.
That's right.
What are we going to do for Confederate History Month tonight, James?
Well, tonight, you and I are going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to remind the people why it is so important that we host this series every year, and then to send us into that good night on Confederate History Month coverage, Jared Taylor will be with us. Another proud son of the South, and he's going to call in a few minutes. But there's one thing we post every year to the website. It's a little booklet that Sam Dixon wrote about Abraham Lincoln, appropriately titled The Truth About Abraham Lincoln. And as I wrote a preface on the blog about this, that even in the Christian schools in the South these days, it's amazing to see the amount of worshipful Lincoln propaganda that these kids are subjected to. But Sam Dixon helps us set the record straight in his booklet, Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln. The real Lincoln, Dixon says, was quite different than the one portrayed on television, school books, and in motion pictures. Dixon marshals evidence throughout his career to show that Lincoln was a hypocrite, an opportunist, an instigator, a wager of ruthless war, and the nation's first political tyrant. particularly critical of the 16th president's savage war against the Confederacy. The author contends that Lincoln should be regarded as a dangerous forerunner to such liberal collectivists as Franklin Roosevelt. For his own work, Dixon had this to say. This is Sam in his own work, in his own words, commenting on his work. The astonishing thing about this booklet on Abraham Lincoln is that it is needed at all or is considered controversial. In my opinion, one doesn't have to be a scholar to ferret out obscure and suppressed facets of history to see Abraham Lincoln as he was. My views on this subject are not unusual. They are those, and this is why I'm bringing this up, they are those of the overwhelming majority of Southerners both immediately before, during, and for decades after the war between the states. My views were also shared by many in the North and the West. Only the passage of time and the studious cultivation of the myth of Abraham Lincoln have caused him to be raised to the level of a sacred cow in American history. I think that's well said.
In other words, you have to lie a lot in order to make him into an icon.
The passage of time, one generation will never be as connected to that as the previous generation was. The passage of time, and as he put it, the studious cultivation of a myth, and that leads us to where we are today, which I believe, ladies and gentlemen, makes the work of this program and others out there that are doing the good work so important and so vital. Where else on the AM radio? Nowhere else on the AM radio you're going to learn true elements of Confederate history. We do the best we can with an hour of each show in a month of commercial radio. It's not a lot, but it's our offering. It's the least we can do.
Has these icons, okay? Just remember this. Just as much of a myth as the myth of Martin Luther King. Whenever the left elevates somebody to demigod-like status, like either Lincoln or Martin Luther King, get ready, you know, put on your hip boots because it's going to get deep. And it does get deep. Both of these men were anything but the paragons they're portrayed to be. And you need to... One of the things you can do, one way you can strike a blow for true conservatism is to pop their balloon. Tell people what the real Lincoln was like. Tell people what the real Martin Luther King was like.
And that's what we do. And we do that every night here on the Political Cesspool, which is why we have fans not only in the South where we started, where we were based, but across the country and indeed now around the world, a global audience tuning into TPC because frankly, we are the only source our movement has, whether you want to call it alt-right or paleoconservative or nationalist. We're the only authentic voice for our people on the mainstream AM radio airwaves. That's what sets us apart. That's what gets us the attention from all the global press. If we were just a blog, and there's some great blogs out there, there's some great people doing stuff on the internet, they're invaluable, but if we were in that soup with everyone else, we wouldn't get the attention that we get. So we have an important
Now that we have set that table, what was it that Lincoln really was like as opposed to the myth? Let's try to handle it real quick.
You've got seconds remaining.
Okay, basically, he was not the great emancipator. He said that he would his goal was to preserve the Union. He said this to Horace Greeley, who was the editor of the most influential paper in the United States at that time. He said that he would preserve the Union if he had to free all the slaves, only freed a few of the slaves, but didn't free a single slave. Keep that in mind. He's also the maven of big government and taxation. When the Virginia delegation came to his office in the phony war period and tried to bring peace, Lincoln didn't say, "What about the slaves?" He said, "What about my tariff?"
There you go. All right, you want to learn more about Lincoln, the real Lincoln, go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Click on that entry about Sam Dixon, the truth about Abraham Lincoln. Read up. We're going to dispel another myth when we come back.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's advanced distance education program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks. Well, one of the things we love doing in Confederate History Month is, of course, explaining to everyone the true cause for that war, the true reasons the South took to arms to defend their homes and firesides. We, of course, celebrate our heroes, the tales of their gallantry and battle, who they were as men. But also, we want to put history into accord with the facts, to borrow a tagline from the Barnes Review. And that's what we're doing tonight. So, yes, it's important to remember the history and the heroism of the Confederates and the Confederacy. But also to dispel the myths, because if we don't do it, who will?
There's a whole mythology that's been developed about the Civil War by the left, which is in control of the educational apparatus, among other things, in America. And quite frankly, just like Rahm Emanuel said, they never let a good crisis go to waste. They also never let a historical moment go to waste. If it's they will transform it into a teachable moment for the left to support and promote their revolution, whether or not the facts back it up or not. Now, Lincoln is a perfect example, and what Lincoln did during his presidency is a very, just one incident after another. We're going to focus on one incident tonight, the so-called Fort Pillow Massacre in Tennessee.
All right. So for those of you who were at our 10-year anniversary celebration in 2014, October 2014, our first speaker at that event was a man by the name of Gene Andrews. Gene Andrews is a former Marine, and after he got out of the Corps, he spent his life as a history teacher. And he gave the most fact-filled presentation, fully illustrated with graphics, on Fort Pillow that I have ever seen, heard, or imagined. Gene Andrews put history into accord with the facts with regard to Fort Pillow at our anniversary celebration. He was so good, I had him on the following year during Confederate History Month on the radio, and he broke it down for an hour on the radio. I think what I'm going to do, in fact, I know what I'm going to do, next week, as I mentioned earlier, don't be alarmed when it's rebroadcast next week on the Political Cesspool. We value our live airtime with you, but as we're making this transition to our new broadcast studio and office,
we owe you a week on Confederate History Month, too, because the first week
that's
we
right.
didn't get it. Now you're going to get it 1 week later in the first week of May.
That's right. I was in Oregon on April 1st, and we had a truncated – I think I made a couple of overtures to Confederate History Month, mainly to say that we would begin it the second week of April. So you're right, Keith. What we're going to do next week during the rebroadcast, I'm tasked with the charge of finding three favorite shows to rebroadcast to you next week. It's Dealer's Choice. And we'll sit down and figure out which ones we want to play during each of the 3 hours as we're moving into our new office and broadcast studio. But one of the ones I'm going to play is the Gene Andrews radio interview that he did with us about Fort Pillow. And it's necessary. Number one, you'll enjoy it because it's true history. We have a lot of history buffs in our audience. And as Keith said, it's even though this is really our final week of Confederate History Month, even though that'll be the first week in May next week and we'll be rebroadcasting some stuff, this is timeless stuff and you need to know it. So he's going to give a much more detailed presentation than Keith will have time to do in the next few minutes. But it's important because right here in the Memphis Commercial Appeal came out a few days ago, Tuesday, April 18th. Here it is, front page, Fort Pillow Massacre Remembered. Okay. Wreaths laid at the Memphis National Cemetery graves. Here's what the story reads, this garbage. And, of course, the myth of Fort Pillow is that Nathan Bedford Forrest and his men saw a bunch of helpless blacks occupying Fort Pillow, and he just massacred them for the hell of it because he was a sadistic racist. And that's the myth of Fort Pillow. We're going to kill that myth next week when we rebroadcast the Gene Andrews interview, but this is what the commercial appeal reads. More than 150 years ago, some 40 miles west of Memphis, one of the greatest massacres of African Americans unfolded. Yeah, I bet they massacre each other in Africa to this day, this so-called massacre, but I digress. But the way one sign at Fort Pillow tells it, they were just some Negroes, quote-unquote, and this is in the Memphis commercial appeal. It was one of many signs that members of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History saw while on the field trip to Fort Pillow some time ago. It, like many others, did more to glorify the Confederacy than tell gory truths. This lying, right. I'm not even going to say what it is.
Well, it's
they
trouble.
Wouldn't know the truth if it hit them in the head.
They would climb on the roof to tell a lie rather than stand on the ground and tell the truth. And they're always going to be leftists. That's why the newspaper is on its ass leg.
But they're saying
and about to go down.
They're telling a lie about what happened at Fort Pillow and telling it as presenting it as the gory truth. No, okay. Let's go.
Let's link it up with Lincoln. The whole massacre at Fort Pillow was that Lincoln manufactured it. Why did he manufacture it? He needed to get people charged up to go to the polls and vote for him in 1864 against the peace candidate George McClellan, the Copperhead Democrat, who would have ended the war had he been elected. There was a lot of war fatigue at that time, so he needed something to get people stirred up. Well, he did it with the supposed massacre of black Union troops at Fort Pillow. That didn't happen. In fact, it so far from happening was the fact that after the war, because they created this cause célèbre of Fort Pillow and made it such a big deal, they actually did court-martial Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. And he was found not guilty of any wrongdoing in this court-martial by none other than the presiding Union officer in charge of the court-martial, none other than William Tecumseh Sherman himself.
And Sherman himself said that he wanted to take Forrest down if it bankrupted the Treasury and cost him 10,000 men. When he had the opportunity to do it on trumped-up charges, even he couldn't go forward with it because there was nothing there.
Well, he said that when he and Forrest were opponents on the field of battle.
Sure.
After the war, he came to admire. In fact, throughout the war, he admired his soldiery and his military skills. That's Forrest. In fact, he wanted Forrest to join the U.S. Army and help him, Phil Sheridan, and George Custer fight the Plains Indians. Of course, he didn't do it. But
I think are we on break? All right, keep going. We heard something in our ears.
Yeah,
we had
something happen. Well, basically, Sherman admired the military skills of Nathan Bedford Forrest. What happened was basically this. The Negro troops had never been in battle before. They had a white Union officer who was not very experienced either. They did not run up the white flag when they should have, and they would have averted a lot of the killing if that had happened. Another thing that's not told is that most of these black soldiers that died sliding down the bluff trying to get away from the Confederates, and they went into the Mississippi River, and then, as it is today, there are a lot of black people that don't know how to swim, and they drowned. They were trying to make it to a Union gunboat that was out in the river. They thought the gunboat was going to come and rescue them, but the gunboat kept its distance, and these guys slid down this hill into the river and discovered they couldn't swim. So this is part of what happened. Furthermore, it came out in this court-martial that there was no wanton killing, that when people surrendered, they were allowed to surrender. That's not what happened. Basically, a lot of these black troops didn't surrender, and some of them pretended to surrender, then picked up their guns or tried to escape, which is a no-no with Union protocol, with military protocol. So there was nothing like the ginned-up fantasy that Abraham Lincoln presented to the nation in order to assist him to be reelected president. This is just part of the lies and dirty tricks that go on in politics. And it is not that General Forrest was the innocent victim of this type of political chicanery.
If you like Keith's teaser on the debunking of Fort Pillow, the myth of Fort Pillow, wait until you hear Gene Andrew during our rebroadcast next week. He's really going to expand upon it. We'll be back with Jared Taylor right after this. Thank you, folks.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website.
No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio program this Saturday evening, April 30th, rounding out Confederate History Month. Of course, TPC, the only mainstream talk show in the world to dedicate a portion of each live broadcast in the month of April to the celebration and preservation of Confederate history and heritage. We have used our media venue to celebrate Confederate History Month every year we've been on the air, going all the way back to 2004. Parade of Southern celebrities have found their way into our studio in April, and it's once again been our honor, to present to you this year's tribute to the South, which we are concluding now in grand fashion. Typically, the guest we have on, when we have guests during the Confederate History Month series, it's someone whose involvement is directly and in many cases exclusively tied to Southern history. A couple of examples say, Michael Andrew Grissom, who wrote the epic Southern by the Grace of God, or people who, like the former president of the Museum of the Confederacy, or the curator of Beauvoir, Jefferson Davis's home, people like that that we've had over the years. And we've even had some people like Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell of South Carolina, who's now the president of the College of Charleston, but he was always heavily involved in Southern things as well. I think the only general guest we've had from our normal rotation of guests to come on to specifically talk about Southern issues has been Sam Dixon. Other than that, if we have a guest on in the hour, it's, like I said, somebody whose identity, public identity, is solely involved to Southern issues. Well, tonight we're having a familiar friend, an old friend, and a familiar face and a familiar voice, I guess you could say, on the radio, Jared Taylor. Jared Taylor, the editor of American Renaissance, is helping us close down Confederate History Month 2017. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing very well. It's always a pleasure to be on your program, James.
Well, it's always our pleasure to have you, my friend, and this is a unique appearance in that we're not talking about our standard fare, but something much more exciting, I guess, to us. Of course, I've always known you, Jared, to be a proud son of the South in conversations that we've had going back many, many, many years. But I was, of course, a guest at your home when we attended the inauguration together back in January. And I couldn't help but notice the Confederate memorabilia and the Confederate money and the wonderful portraits and books. And I said, one thing I really want to do this year, if the opportunity presents itself, is to have you on during Confederate History Month just to talk about the South. I don't think we've ever done that before. Although when I had you on to talk about the inauguration, you made mention of Chuck Schumer's speech in which he honored the Union soldier who died, and we sort of were excited about that reality. And I said, yes, Jared, this is definitely something we're going to do. And so I'm happy to have you. Jared, when why do we celebrate Confederate history? Put it in your own words. I think I've told the audience so many times why it's important to me. Why is it important to you, or why would you say that it should be important to everyone to remember the Confederacy and what it stood for?
Well, our ancestors fought for their nation. They fought proudly for what they thought was right. They fought bravely against overwhelming odds, and we have every reason to celebrate them and be absolutely proud of them. It was really the second American Revolution. The first American Revolution was a secession from Great Britain, and because it succeeded, those people are rightly considered heroes. Our second secession, our second revolution, did not succeed. But that's no reason to think that it was not motivated for the same reasons of independence, desire for sovereignty. And we must and always will admire our ancestors who fought as bravely and as resolutely as they did for what they believed in. Now, and I tell you, to this day, I get more of a thrill when I salute the Confederate flag than when I pledge allegiance. That's the flag that really sends chills up and down my spine. And I think that's the way for many Southerners.
Well, it's certainly that way for me, to say the very least. I am with you 100% on that, my brother. And I told you tonight, that as we're capping off Confederate History Month this year, we would have just sort of a broad general discussion about these things. We wouldn't focus on one particular battle or one particular hero or one particular ideal. We would just sort of let it be open-ended and free-flowing and let you go wherever you want to take it. So this is about as broad of a question as I could ask you. A favorite Confederate anecdote or story? I think for me, if someone would ask me, the story of Nathan Bedford Forrest at Fallen Timbers, as the Confederates were retreating from Shiloh, we talk about the Hunley every year, John Breckinridge, and how he marshaled the cadets at VMI at the Battle of New Market. There's just so many stories. I mean, if we had nothing to do on this show for 3 hours every week for a year, you could never cover them all. But those are three of my favorites, but there's so many more. What would you say if somebody says your favorite story from the Confederacy, what would it be?
Well, I will give you a surprise. I will give you a story about my mother, who was a true daughter of the Confederacy. She was, interestingly enough, a liberal in every respect. She was an early proponent of women's liberation. She would have supported the gay rights movement, all that sort of thing, but she loved the South. And she thought that that was the only war that her country had ever lost. And she used to say that it was great when Jimmy Carter was elected because finally we had a president who did not speak with an accent. and she spent a year in Cambridge. She was she was doing some studying at Harvard, actually. And this was after she was she was already a mother of three children. She was a grown woman, but she used to love going out to the Massachusetts countryside, and she'd go to these beautiful little villages, and they all had a village green, and they had a monument to their war dead. And she didn't know what to make of this. You know, she would go, drive by these statues, and they'd say, to our proud boys, you know, who put down the rebellion. And finally, she came up with a formulation for what those monuments were that she could be satisfied with. And she started referring to them as monuments to Confederate marksmanship. That's what I call them to this day. Whenever I see one of those memorials, I call it a monument to Confederate marksmanship.
Well, hopefully you don't have to see them too often in Virginia, but I remember
we don't see them in Virginia, but when you go into Yankee territory, you still see
them.
That's
right. I remember going up to Maine last year, or maybe it was the year before last. I was in Portland, Maine. I was in Portland, Oregon earlier this month. I was in Portland, Maine a year or two ago, and I saw one, and it may have been the first one I had ever seen, even though I'd spent some time in above the Mason-Dixon line, obviously, in my life, but I think it was the first time I ever actually came across one of these things, and I was just taken aback.
Well, that's right. Well, she felt the same way. She didn't know what to make of this thing until, as I say, she came up with this formulation that sort of gave her peace of mind so she could look at those things with satisfaction.
I love that story. That is an incredible story. How about this? We mentioned you being in Virginia. You have, of course, an embarrassment of riches to choose from when picking a hero. And obviously, I know Stonewall Jackson is yours, and Robert E. Lee, 1A and 1B, perhaps they could be used interchangeably. I don't want to say those are easy and obvious choices, but just for the sake of the odd, and they should be, and they absolutely should be. I mean, God knows, no greater two Americans. I don't think two greater Americans ever existed beyond Lee and Jackson. They are the first two in any order you want to put them. But there are so many, I don't say this as a denigration, but perhaps more obscure legends of the Confederacy, too, that we give credence to sometime, or D.S. Job, a Confederate scout who was captured by Union forces, was hung from a tree, had his eyes gouged out and his tongue cut off, and of course, they were torturing him so he would reveal the location of Confederate forces in the area. He never gave up his men. He finally died being drugged behind a galloping horse. There's one we don't even know her name, but we call her the Southern Boudica. She was a woman. The Yankees were coming through their town, burning the town, and she took out nearly an entire unit before. And she was shot repeatedly. She just kept killing. And this is just some unnamed woman of the South who was trying to defend her home. Is there one like that that sticks out to you, Jared, that might not be readily familiar to the audience?
Oh, I'm sure your audience is entirely familiar with Oswald Mosley. The Gray Ghost, of course, he had his own little Confederacy here, and one of the roads that I drive up used to be one of the trails that his men would would gallop up and down. They turned it into a rather narrow road here, but I'm living in Mosley's Confederacy. And to me, one of the significant things about the Grey Ghost is that they made a television series about him back in late 50s, early 60s. And this was something that was recognized all around the country, the heroism of Confederates and all of his wonderful exploits. This was something that the whole nation could celebrate. And that was just 100 years, really, after the war. Now, 150 years later, we are all compelled to think that those guys were demons, that they were awful, evil people. It just goes to show you how the nation has changed in these horrible, horrible ways. Both sides could celebrate heroism in those days. Not anymore.
That's absolutely right. And even as late as you mentioned, in the 1950s and 60s, there were Confederate toy cannons that were made by major toy manufacturers, and the commercials would be on the air nationwide before our dearly departed brother Bill Rowland went to his eternal reward. He put me in touch with a YouTube video of this, and that is within the lifetime of most of our listening audience, I would say. So that's just pretty incredible. But we'll be back. I want to ask Jared one or two more questions pertaining to Legends of the Confederacy, and then we're going to get into plug the upcoming AMRIN conference. It's coming up soon, folks, and you'll want to hear all about it. Stay tuned.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, it's hard to believe of that, this is our last segment in Confederate History Month 2017. We do have a third hour coming up, but it's going to be on more contemporary topics. And I'm really excited to have Jared on to talk about this because I light up like a Christmas tree every time I talk to Jared and people like Jared about these issues, and to be able to do it on a public forum like this on AM radio, very, very special and a unique opportunity that we have. Well, one thing I do, Jared, every year, as soon as the calendar flips to April, is I post on the website the Confederate ancestry that I have, my personal ancestry, including the headstone of my great-great-great-grandfather in Corinth, Mississippi, Levi Smith, Private 4th Battalion of the Mississippi Cavalry. And as I said in, I think, my last speech at American Renaissance, every man in my family tree on both sides, all branches that were old enough to fight, fought. And that is just an incredible heritage for me to accept. And as I've said before, to be directly descended from this noble line of brave and fighting men is the highest honor I could receive. And I don't want to chase a rabbit, Jared, but I believe perhaps genetic predisposition played a role in who I am today, that their blood is in my veins and I'm finding a way to fight on in the ways that are available to me now. Do you subscribe to that?
Oh, you have the blood of heroes in your veins. I do, too. It's one of the things I'm proudest of. Absolutely. And, no, that does, I think that gives us backbone, that gives us will, that gives us determination. We're going to fight on because we know we're fighting in the right cause.
Well, that's absolutely right. And as much as we've done, and I know a lot of people would call you a hero, and you certainly are, Jared, and I try to do my best efforts, and how could we do anything less when we look at their sacrifices? And I've said it time and time again, other than my wife and my, there's anything in the world that I'm more proud of than to be a direct descendant from these men. And it's really one of the biggest reasons I fight so hard to preserve and protect the memory of the Confederacy. A man who won't defend his family's name and honor, that's not a man at all.
No, it's just disgusting the way so many Southerners have turned their back on that for which they should be proudest. There are few things that disgust me more. They really are traitors to their ancestors, traitors to their cause, and by the same token, they are traitors to their own descendants, this kind of foolishness.
Well, and it would be one thing if the history that they teach now about the South had been true, had they been evil people and all of these lies, if all of that were true, well, they would still be my people. I would still never spit on the grave of an ancestor. But the fact that they were so righteous and holy and good and decent and honorable, I mean, my goodness, what else can you do except stand up for it? And I say all that to say this, Jared, if you don't mind, I mean, this may be somewhat personal. You don't have to go into more detail than you would like, but I know it's something that I enjoy sharing. Is there any branches, any personal ancestors who fought for the South that you'd like to honor tonight?
Well, my best-known ancestor of all my ancestors is General William Robertson Boggs. He's buried in Salem Cemetery in Winston-Salem, and there's even an SCV camp named after him. He was E. Kirby Smith's chief of staff.
And, wow.
Right before the war even began, he laid the gun emplacements on Morris Island and Fort Moultrie before the bombardment of Fort Sumter. He was an engineer. He was a West Point graduate. He knew how to get artillery lined up, and he was the guy who made sure that when they fired off those cannon, they were going to hit that fort. So he I'm very, very proud of, as you can imagine. I have other.
Man, are you?
Yes.
That's I just have to pause you there. That is absolutely incredible. You may have shared that with me before. It seems vaguely familiar, but it seems like that would have stood out. I mean, you actually have an ancestor who not only was a part of history, but literally made history. I mean, one of the defining moments in American history, he was there and was putting the guns in place.
He was not there at the time. He had been sent on some other mission when the guns went off, but he put the guns in place. He has written a book called The Military Reminiscences of William Robertson Boggs. It's one of the standard sort of minor references that you consult when you're looking into those campaigns. So, yes, he's certainly the best known. Another one of my ancestors on my mother's side was actually a chaplain. He was not a fighting man, but he was certainly a Southerner, and he was going to do his best, even though he did not carry a gun. He carried a Bible, and that's the weapon he fought with.
If you tell me it's R.L. Dabney, I don't know what I'm going to do.
If I tell you what?
I said, if you tell me it's R.L. Dabney, I don't know what I'm going to do.
No, I cannot make that claim. I would not have held that, kept that light under a bushel.
But nevertheless, we honor them all, the ones we know, the ones we don't know. They know us, and we are a continuance of that line. And for the people who will come after us, Jared, your children's children and my children's children, they will still be connected through us to them and the people who even came centuries before the Confederates. And for centuries from now, it is absolutely vital that we maintain that racial integrity. And, of course, remember the morality and the principles that these people share, because it's all baked into the cake.
Yes, it is part of me in a way that goes as deep as just about anything. And I try to instill a pride in their ancestry in my children, and I hope they will do the same for their children and their children. For as long as we tailors walk the earth, this is really something that goes right down the core of my being, is the honor and the bravery and the dedication of my southern ancestors.
Well, 1,000 years from now, if Providence should shine upon us, Jared, that our line still be walking this earth, Confederate blood will still be in those veins, and hopefully that those people will remember it. But listen, I don't want to cut this short because this is just so enjoyable, but there is something important we must mention tonight, and that is the upcoming American Renaissance Conference. We have about 3 or 4 minutes remaining, and I want to give you the complete floor to tell people all the details about that, how they can register, the who, what, where, when, and why. Take it away, my friend.
Yes, we always have a wonderful time at these conferences. They'll be held in your state, not far out of Nashville, Tennessee, in Montgomery Bell State Park. It will be July, the last weekend in July, 28th through 30. And we have a number of familiar faces, Peter Brimelow, Sam Dixon, myself, I'll be speaking. But also John Derbyshire will speak. I think all of your people, all of your listeners, you've probably had many of them as guests on your program. But we also have some really exciting new young people. A fellow named Marcus Follen. He's going to speak on the case of Sweden, what we can learn from it. He has a YouTube presence. He's known as the Golden One. He is a bodybuilder, and he believes that our rejuvenation starts with each of us ourselves. We have to be strong. We can't blame anybody else, and he has a very interesting perspective on Sweden. We have a fellow from Germany, actually, Martin Leitmetz is his name. He is a member of the think tank, the Institute for Staatspolitik, and he's a contributor to German New Right magazines. He's actually the translator of the Camp of the Saints into German, and he's another young guy, not very well known in the United States, but has an increasingly remarkable profile on the continent. And he's going to be talking about national movements in Austria and Germany and where they're going. And some of your listeners have probably heard of Helmuth Nyborg. He is one of the real great names in race and IQ studies. He's a Dane. He's now retired, but he's still a very active, vigorous guy. He did research not only on sex differences in IQ, but particularly important, he looked into the consequences of third world immigration to Europe in terms of what kind of impact that will have on the genetic structure of Europe and ultimately on its civilization. And as you can imagine, he got into terrible trouble for that. But when you see him, you will recognize in his figure, although he's in his 70s, you'll recognize that this is a guy who, in fact, won a bronze medal for his country in sprint canoeing at the Rome Olympics in 1960. He's still got that very trim, athletic, vigorous look about him.
As do you.
Well, I wish I had been an Olympic medalist, but not quite that
Don't
far.
We all? Hey, well, yeah. Jared, listen, the speakers are obviously a big part of the attraction. You can't have a conference without great speakers, and you always find a way to fill your docket with them. But, of course, everybody comes for the fellowship, which they can find at Ameren Conferences par excellence. So with just seconds remaining, they can go to Ameren.com and register, of course, pay the registration fee, book their room at the lodge, which is where the conference will be held. So it's a one-stop shop. What are the dates?
The dates are July 28th through 30th. And unfortunately, the lodge rooms are all filled, but there are many very reasonably priced motels right around in the area. We have filled up the lodge. We're going to eventually maybe have to find some different venue because we're bursting at the seams. But
that is incredible. To have filled the lodge, what, 2 months, more than 2 months in advance of the event, that is
right.
Absolutely outstanding, folks. But you can still come. Yeah. You can still come.
Right.
If you've not yet bought your ticket, there's still a place for you at the conference. You'll just have to stay a couple of miles down the road and then come on over for the action.
And it's really not at all inconvenient. So we urge people to register, and now is the time to do it. And you will be among the living. It's a wonderful thing to be in a room full of people, all of whom understand. There is no feeling like it. So please do register, and we look forward to seeing you all.
For those of you in my audience, and I know there are many of you who have been to AMRIN conferences before, you already know why you need to go. For those of you who haven't but are thinking about it, this is the time. AMRIN.com. Coming up at the end of July, they're just a little west of Nashville, Tennessee. Jared, thank you, brother. We love you. We'll talk to you again soon. Third hour coming up next.
The political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.